Welcome to the Impart Podcast, where patients from New Brunswick talk to us about living with obesity, cancer, diabetes, cardiovascular, and other medical conditions. We'll also delve into related topics such as patient outcomes, our health industry, our community, and the role technology is playing in all of it. It is a candid, often personal, more humane discussion about the health of not just one New Brunswicker, but the health of every one of us. Hi, my name is Hans Colburn, and I am the host of the Impart Podcast, and my guest today is Bob McVicker. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Hans.
Nice to have you here.
It's really good to be here.
So you hurt your back in November of 2018. You had trouble getting around, re-aggravating it again in May of 2019. For months, you self-medicated, you dealt with the pain. Why didn't you just go to the doctor?
Well, you know, I'm one of those, tens of thousands of New Brunswickers who didn't have a family doctor. I had one a number of years ago. She retired, and I was kind of thrown on the heap. So I've never been one inclined much to go to the doctor anyway, and the fact that I didn't have a family doctor didn't trouble me in the way that it troubles a lot of people. And when I did get sick, didn't really feel I was sick. When I did injure my back, I took to the Advil and the Tylenol, and those are powerful drugs, and they're available over the counter. And I was able to make my pain go away, on the first round of a back injury, and then less so on the second round of the back injury, as you indicated in the opening. In your opening comments, at some point, by the time it got to be the last week of July of 2019, when I'd gone off to Lunenburg to spend a couple of days one-on-one with my oldest son, I arrived in Lunenburg, and I got out of my car and could barely walk and could barely get into the grocery store and the liquor store to get supplies for a couple of days. So I had resisted going to emergency. I didn't have a family doctor. I think I bought into the fact that it would be difficult, it would be painful to get access to health care. I bought into the notion that if I did show up at the outdoor, as St. Johners like to call it, the emergency department, that I'd be there for hours waiting, and I'm not a good waiter of any sort in my life. I'm an impatient person by nature. So I was self-medicating, and I bought into all of that public discussion about how difficult it is to access healthcare in New Brunswick. I bought into it in spades.
So what did make you finally go?
Well, I really didn't have an option aside from the great deal of pressure that I was receiving with the best intentions from my partner Chris. I simply couldn't walk, and I think she finally said to me, "Look, if you don't go, I don't know what we're going to do, but you got to go." So on a Thursday, I don't know, it was the 7th or 8th of August. Finally, around late afternoon, 4 o'clock, I finally submitted, and she and I went to the emergency department and took a number and got triaged pretty quickly and explained to them my back problem. And it wasn't nearly the experience I anticipated it would be. I think a lot of people who dread going to emergency because they don't have a family doctor and all you hear about is the long waits, but the whole process of triage, particularly at the St. John Regional Hospital Department, certainly was effective from my perspective. And after I described my condition, they got us in to see a doctor pretty quickly. He examined my rectum, and which struck me as odd initially because I thought I had, my back was a problem. But the doctor asked me, had I ever had one? I said, no. He said, well, I'm going to do that. And I said, great. And he did. And and they took some blood. And so they thought, based on my description of my condition, I had some other neurological condition that I don't remember the name of. And they thought it was, there was a good chance that if it was what they thought it was in that moment, it was, proceeding up my body, and if it got to my brain, it would kill me. So they said, you better come back tomorrow. We'll have you come back tomorrow, and we'll get you treated. We'll get you in to see a neurologist Friday afternoon. So we left, we left the hospital Thursday evening after some blood work and that examination by the ungentle doctor, and went home, showed up as we were appointed to around 3:30 the next day to see a neurologist who was going to treat me for this condition, which he did treat me for. But, you know, by then, the file that he had in front of him had the results of the blood work that they'd taken the day before, and I didn't know what was there, and he just kind of looked at me and said, you know, who ordered this blood? And I said, well, when I was here yesterday, they took a, you know, they took a blood sample. And he said, you don't have a family doctor? I said, no, I don't. And he said, well, I can't let you just leave. He seemed quite concerned, and he said, I don't quite know what to do with you. But he still didn't tell me what he was seeing in my blood work that was so obviously so worrisome to him. Anyway, he decided after, he literally said, let me think about this for a minute. And he put his head down for, you know, a minute or so. And he said, I'm going to go over back over to emergency, and I'm going to see if somebody will see you right away. So still didn't know what was going on. And he went and came back, and he had found a doctor over in emergency and who would see me right away. And we went over there, and he quickly told me that, you know, my PSA, which is the, you know, the marker for a prostate cancer, was some horrendous number. I didn't know a thing about PSA numbers then. You know, I guess a normal PSA is 2 or 3, and I understand now that if it gets to be 5 or 6, they start to think that there may be an issue. But mine was 1,218.
So, wow.
Yeah, like a number that... When I recounted it to some folks, you know, later, they said, oh, that can't be right. But it was right. It was 1,218. So clearly, they, you know, the doctor who I went to see in emergency that Friday evening said, look, you've clearly got, likely have prostate cancer, you know, based on some other markers that were in my blood test. He said, it looks like it's already gone to your into your bones, and we can't let you go home. We're gonna admit you. So in 24 hours, I go from having a back problem to being admitted for, you know, to a hospital with cancer that's already progressed into my bones.
And in between that, diagnosed with a possible neurological disorder that could be fatal, but now it's turned to cancer.
Yeah, and turned out I didn't have that condition, but they proceeded with the treatment just in case, which I thought was pretty remarkable. They, you know, again, the way that the medical system seemed to step up to my issues to me was quite impressive, you know, because I was the guy 48 hours, you know, earlier, wasn't too keen to go there because I didn't want to see myself sitting there for, you know, half a day with a herd of other people. And so the way they reacted, you know, to my condition and to my, you know, to my blood work was just, to me, you know, astounding, impressive, incredible.
And what happened after they determined the PSA was so high and that the possibility of prostate cancer was so great?
Well, they did admit me, and they lined up a series of tests. So, you know, I was admitted Friday night. They finished the treatment for the neurological condition that I turned out not to have. But, you know, Saturday morning was a whirlwind of tests. I mean, I had tests done on Saturday morning that, you know, a lot of New Brunswickers would wait for months. So I had 2 MRIs, and I had CAT scans, and I had... you know, a significant string of additional blood work and whatever else. I can't entirely remember what else exactly, but it was a Saturday. It was clear to me that people were coming in, had been called in to take care of these things for me. So beginning about 8:30 on Saturday morning, through into about lunchtime, I had all of those tests done. You know, and again, things that people would typically wait months for. And, you know, then I was talking to a neurologist indirectly and was told that, you know, they need a few hours now to process all of these tests that they'd taken. So by 4 o'clock that afternoon, we met actually face to face, met the neurologist for the first time. And, you know, she sat on the corner of my bed and said, here's what we know about everything. And she told me I had untreatable prostate cancer. It had spread and wrapped itself around my spinal cord and all the major nerves that come from my spinal cord. And of course, that, you know, when you think about, you know, why couldn't I walk and why do I continue to have mobility issues? Because cancer is wrapped all around the, you know, the major nerves. And so my brain sends a message, you know, to turn your leg, swing your leg left, and it gets muddled a bit. But anyway, you know, by 4 o'clock, it's incredible if you think of the timelines, you know, from from Thursday at around 4 o'clock going to the hospital for the first time with a bad back, and literally 48 hours later I'm being told I've got untreatable terminal cancer.
Well, I want to touch on that for a moment, because for those of us that know you, they know that you're not a shrinking violet. Mm. You're a well-known person, a proponent of the Uptown, a champion of the Uptown of St. John, a real estate agent here in the city. But you weren't pulling strings to get this care for yourself.
No, I mean we didn't ask for anything other. We just followed their lead and did as they said. And I don't for a moment believe that the treatment that I received had anything to do with any of the things that you just mentioned. I think that the healthcare system in New Brunswick, particularly, I guess I can really only speak for St. John Regional Hospital, but certainly when they knew that I had some major issue that had been untreated, they stepped up. I mean, the people came to give me tests, in their summer weekend clothing. So clearly, people have been called in. I had my first, I got the news about my condition, the final news, as I mentioned a moment ago, about 4 o'clock on Saturday. I had my first radiation treatment at 6:30 or 7 o'clock that evening. And I know for certain that the two women who came in and gave me my first radiation treatment had been called in. They came in just to see me. We were turning on the lights in the room where the equipment is, and they were warming the machine up, so to speak. So, again, I guess, is there a moral to the story in all of this? And I guess what I think it probably is that if there's people out there right now who feel that they're not well and they're resisting going to the hospital because they don't have a family doctor, and they think, that the approach at emergency will be, you'll just be treated like a number and you'll have to sit and wait, and therefore if you're a person like me, you say, oh, the hell with it, I'm just not going to go. It's a mistake. You should go, because if you're really sick, and if they identify quickly that you've got some major issue of some kind, they seem to open the gates, and everything that they've got comes at you, and you get this incredible treatment. And that's really contrary to, the common... the common debate that goes on in New Brunswick about healthcare is that the notion that it's all dysfunctional and you can't get care if you're sick. I just don't think it's true based on my experience. So by noon, I'd had this full spectrum of testing and analysis of my body, my cancer, and so by 4 o'clock, they'd figured it all out, and at 4 o'clock, the neurologist came to my room where Chris and I were waiting for her, and said, we know everything there is to know about what's going on with your body and in your body now, and you have terminal, untreatable prostate cancer. It's already in your bones. My cancer was from literally my groin, from my prostate. And it had moved all the way up my body to just around my, my breast area. And so she said, look, what we have to do first is we have to, we're going to give you some radiation treatment to try and stop the cancer in its tracks. And the initial plan was for 5 treatments, and I had my first radiation treatment. I mean, get a load of this, right? And my first radiation treatment is at 6:30 or 7 p.m. Saturday. So from having an MRI at 8:30 and my first radiation treatment, not even 12 hours later. And again, the two women who came in to give me my first radiation treatment, had shorts and T-shirts. They clearly had come in just to help me. And, they were turning on the lights in the room and warming up the gear. And so clearly, this was an effort to, a real quick response. Clearly, clearly, I think our healthcare system, particularly at the regional here, is geared towards reacting. When there's something really big and wrong and requires immediate attention, there was no hesitation. They did what they had to do. I was acutely aware of how they had, they were moving quickly to help me. It never occurred to me that it was special treatment. And I still don't think it was, but it was impressive.
How did that treatment go? What followed that first treatment on that Saturday night?
Well, I had the initial plan was that I would have 5 radiation treatments, and so there was 5 points of my body where they were sort of at the ends of the growth of the cancer, which was, you know, pretty much through my whole trunk. So 5 radiation treatments, 5 days in a row. Subsequently became 15 radiation treatments over a 17 or 18 day period. There was one weekend in the midst of that where I didn't go in for radiation. So for, you know, 15 zaps over about 17 or 18 days. And I had instant positive reactions to all of those things. I think the reason that I ended up getting 15 instead of 5 was because they weren't making me sick. I didn't have any adverse reaction. A lot of people really suffer with radiation, and for whatever God-given good, you know, good upon me, thank you, I didn't. So they just kept giving me more, I think. And, you know, my mobility began to change instantly. And I hadn't mentioned to you, but, you know, in those months before I finally went for treatment, I'd lost my appetite, and I'd lost my, I couldn't taste anything, and I didn't really feel like eating. And within days, my appetite was back. I could taste things. You know, people joke about the hospital food, but, you know, it started to taste good to me. I could finally taste something. So I was in the hospital for a week. I mean, I just shy of a week by a day. And so, you know, the initial plan was, you know, we're going to try and zap the ends of your cancer. We'll send you home, and we'll try to manage your pain. And, you know, doctors don't like to give you time. And certainly the doctors I spoke to, you know, particularly the doctor that sat on the corner of my bed that day, I pressed her hard for time. You know, as you said, I'm no shrinking violet, and I'm also a business guy, so I always want to know the numbers. Well, how much time? Well, you know, Mr. McVicker, I said, look, I know, but you're telling me you can't really treat it much. There was no talk of surgery or anything. You're really just telling me you're going to give me some radiation, and I appreciate that. I was grateful for it, and some pain medication to send me home. So how much time? And so finally, after I pushed her hard enough, she said 2 to 4 months. You know, so that was in August, around August. It was August the 10th. I should remember that. So 2 to 4 months, and off you go home. But you know, my body was strong in spite of all this cancer, and so all those radiation treatments helped me. They didn't hurt me. I wasn't nauseous. It didn't burn my skin. It didn't zap my energy. It's amazing to them and to me. And so at the end of that period of time, you know, those 15, 16, 17 days when I got the radiation, the last radiation treatment, I was told that right after I received that treatment, I was going to go see Dr. Gray. And I'd never met Dr. Gray. And Chris was with me, as she was all through that, every day, for everything. She said to me, what are we going to see this Dr. Gray for? I said, I have no idea. I said, I've never heard of her. I don't even know who she is, and I don't know why we're going to see her, but somebody told me, when you're done, go down to Dr. Gray's office. And so I said to Chris, I presume it's just, you know, we're going home tomorrow, and I presume somebody's going to tell me what to do when we get home. That's what I thought. So we went down and met Dr. Gray, and she asked me, you know, what is your understanding of your condition? So I explained to her what I thought my condition was, and she said, well, I think there's something else we could do for you if you wanted more time. And I said, well, you know, I'd be all for more time, but I don't want to be one of those cancer patients in bed, you know, 75 or 80 pounds, you know, not eating and just being a burden. I'd already made the decision the day I got the news about my cancer that I was going to sign up for MAID, which is, you know, medically assisted death. And I'd done that, you know, within the first 2 or 3 days, and we'll talk about that later. But Dr. Gray knew clearly what my mind was. I wanted to live, and I wanted to live longer, and I wanted to live my normal life. But if I couldn't live my normal life, I didn't want to be that suffering cancer patient. I remembered my grandmother's death from bone cancer and how horrible that was, and I didn't want to go there. But so she understood that. She said, look, I see your file. I see you've signed up for MAID, and I'm telling you that this treatment that I could give you, if you agree to take it, would give you another year or so, and you could carry on just as you are. Because even she, you know, we just met, even she was impressed that after 2 weeks of what I'd been through with radiation and the fact that I had cancer as extensively as I did, she was kind of amazed that I walked into her office, you know, under my own power, and I didn't look like a cancer patient. So she recommended that I would take a fairly new drug, oral chemo tablets, which I take, you know, two every morning, and now into the sixth or seventh month of that. And so here I am, you know, it's, what is it now, 7 or 8 months later. I didn't die in the 2 to 4 months that they thought I would. I've responded positively to all the treatment that they've given me. I'm lucky to be here, and I'm grateful to be here.
Despite that positive overall experience, Bob, is it difficult to navigate when you don't have a family doctor?
Well, I can't imagine, you know, it wasn't, I have a family doctor now. I mean, they appointed somebody because, you know, somebody had to sort of be the center point. So Dr. Thomas is now my family doctor. So I presume, I guess it would be difficult, but I think what would really be difficult, I mean, I'm 65, 66 years old, and I'm, you know, have all my wits about me, and I still work, and you know, what I do is, you know, fairly, you know, taxing and engaging thing, selling, being a realtor. But, you know, there was a lot of things. There was a lot of information. There was a lot of appointments. There was a lot of, you know, go here, do this, show up, then take this, get that. And, you know, Chris was always with me, and she kept track of it. And, you know, through all of that period, I mean, it was a shock to both of us. But you know, to think that I could have kept track of all that on my own, family doctor or no family doctor, without Chris, without a partner, it just seemed to be, it would have been impossible. I mean, Chris would tell you if she was here that even for her to keep track of it all, like, you know, she started a binder. We had all this information, you know, all these appointments, all this medication. She was, you know, just a superstar at keeping track of all that. So I can't imagine if you're 80 or 85 and you're alone and you live alone and you don't have a partner, and you suddenly run into what I ran into, you know, and I think it would be a daunting thing to manage your own care and keep track of it. I couldn't have.
What would you say to patients who are reluctant to seek medical help for something?
I would say get over yourself. Don't do what I did. Don't defer it. I mean, there will be people who will hear this who have things going on in their body that are serious that they're not getting a treatment for because they, you know, for all the reasons that I didn't, they don't have a family doctor, they're afraid to show up, they think it'll go away.
We've also heard, you know, don't overburden the system by going in for your, you know, your fever or your cold. Don't go into the ER.
Well, it's part of what clogs up the system, and I think, you know, unfortunately, you know, too many people show up who perhaps shouldn't. Maybe there's other ways, and I know there's an issue around primary care, and I don't want to get into that too deeply, but you know, there are people that abuse the system. There's no question about that, and anybody who would say otherwise wouldn't be being honest about it, and I'm not trying to be mean about it, but I think New Brunswickers should be convinced, be confident that if you feel really sick, if there's something really going on in your body that's not right, and I'm not talking about a sniffle or a sneeze, although with the coronavirus around now, maybe that's the wrong advice, but, you know, go get treatment and be confident in the fact that if it's discovered in triage, if you don't have a family doctor and you show up at emergency and they triage you, that, you know, if there's something really going on, they're going to throw it at you in the best way. So, you know, I really did my family and myself a disservice by deferring and not going when I should have gone. And, you know, the New Brunswick government, you know, as everybody may know or may not know, you know, there's programs right now that are current that are aimed at men about going and getting a regular examination for your prostate. And there's programs that are aimed at women about going and getting regular breast examinations or cervical examinations. And a lot of us don't take them up on it, right? There's a lot of people that are getting sick that couldn't or shouldn't. You know, if I'd gone and got a regular annual checkup going back 10 years, I wouldn't be in the boat I'm in now. You know, the cancer that I have, I've probably had it for more than 5 years of it, but, you know, being the big, strong boy, and, you know, then there's supposed to be all kinds of symptoms around prostate cancer, but I didn't have any of those. I didn't have problems urinating. I didn't have any problems in my sexual life. I didn't have any pain or discomfort. And so not everybody does, but if I'd just done what the government has offered to everybody in New Brunswick of a certain age, is to go get a blood test once a year and check your PSA, you know, I wouldn't be in the boat I'm in. You know, all three of my sons have, you know, since August gone and had their PSA checked. And, you know, one of them has an elevated PSA reading of 5 or more. And, you know, they haven't concluded yet where that's all going for him, but it's been identified. And, you know, if he happens to have been headed in the same direction that I've been, we've caught that. And he won't, hopefully he won't die from prostate cancer because, you know, he did what I should have done. And I guess I can take some comfort in the fact that, you know, my situation, if there's any value in it, at least has motivated my own children to go. And I know it's motivated a lot of my personal friends to go, and I hope, you know, when people listen to this chat we're having today, that people who haven't gone and will go, you know, will go and get some things checked and live a longer life.
Well, Bob, we do have a lot more to talk about, including that crucial decision you made after you were diagnosed with prostate cancer, and we're going to be talking about that on the next episode of the Impart podcast. You could be part of the solution with Impart. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you'd like to learn more or listen to previous episodes, our website is impart.team. This podcast was produced by Carrie Lynn Kalp, and thanks to our author, Juliana Prestis, and our advisor, Keith Brunt. Thanks, of course, to Local 107.3 FM for the facilities. I'm Hans Colburn. Be well.